This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In Boston federal court today, Massachusetts civil liberties lawyers argued that President Donald Trump's executive order on immigration violates the United States Constitution and should be permanently overturned. The case comes at the end of a tumultuous week in Boston following the president's signing of the ban on Friday night, one that immediately barred visa holders from seven Muslim-majority countries. More than 100,000 visas have been revoked, that according to a government lawyer in a separate case heard today in a Virginia federal court. Well, joining us now from the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston is WBUR's Shannon Dooling. She's been covering the story very closely. Hi there, Shannon.
Hi, Meghna.
So there was a hearing today at the Moakley Courthouse. What was the mood like? What was the scene like in court?
It was a packed courtroom, to say the least. There was a waiting list circulating to get into the courtroom, both for media and for members of the public. This has obviously generated a lot of interest locally and nationally and internationally. We've been hearing all week about this decision, about whether or not this temporary restraining order will be extended beyond the Sunday deadline.
Mm. Now, what argument, then, did the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, that's arguing this case, what did they say? Why did they say they think the ban is unconstitutional? On what basis?
Well, basically, their argument is that this executive order focuses on a narrow group of people, those seven majority Muslim countries, and that by doing so, it's banning them from traveling effectively based on their religion. Matthew Siegel, who's from the ACLU of Massachusetts, one of the lead lawyers for the plaintiffs, also said that while the Immigration and Naturalization Act does grant the president broad power to deny entry into the country of certain people that, you know, in the interest of keeping the nation secure, what Siegel and the ACLU is arguing is that the president did so with what he's been calling malintent, that the context here, we have to consider, you know, the tweets from the president along the campaign trail and things like that to kind of get the full picture here, and that the president's intent was, in fact, to ban or suspend the entry of Muslims in particular. So hearing today, sorry about that. Let's hear a little bit about Matt Siegel.
What we've seen in the last week is people have been thrown into chaos. Their lives have been upended. I mean, what we're talking about is affecting people's lives every day. And what this case is about battling for those people's lives and really battling for the soul of the country.
So Siegel says that if the judge does not extend the temporary restraining order, we should expect to see chaos here in Boston and around the world.
Hmm. Okay, so that's the argument that the Massachusetts ACLU is making, looking to the Constitution there. What did the defense, the government, have to say?
I must say that the lawyers for the U.S. Justice Department did not appear to sort of have as robust of a preparation as the lawyers for the plaintiffs did. But they did argue that it is a necessary safety measure, this executive order, and that the president does indeed have the right to keep the country safe. And the lawyer for the government reiterated that there is no Muslim ban and that this executive order is faith neutral.
Hmm. Now, Shannon, just to underscore a point you made a little earlier, it seems one of the key issues here is just how much power is held by the president under the law. It seems as if the judge is being asked to decide if power in this case is defined by the Immigration and Naturalization Act, as you said, or the United States Constitution. So did the judge hearing this case give any hints in his questioning about where he might stand on that?
You know, he sort of did. Judge Gorton asked the attorneys for the plaintiffs repeatedly to show him where the executive order mentions a Muslim ban. Where does the executive order specifically mention majority Muslim countries? If you'll recall, it lists seven countries, but it does not refer to those as majority Muslim countries specifically in the executive order. Judge Gorton read from the executive order verbatim several times. He also read from the Immigration and Naturalization Act several times. He talked about the powers of the president inherent in the INA, and he pushed back hard on the lawyers for the plaintiffs when they tried to argue that, again, given the context of Trump's previous remarks, his previous tweets, his campaign promises, that, you know, it's imperative that the court realize that this is a religious ban. That's what the lawyers for the plaintiffs are arguing. Now, Judge Gorton said the president's powers are indeed broad when it comes to immigration. But he also said to the lawyers for the plaintiffs, listen, you're asking me to extend this restraining order, assuming someone in the government may do something illegal, because, again, the lawyers for the plaintiffs were unable to point directly to anything in the executive order that mentioned specifically majority Muslim countries or a Muslim ban.
Interesting. Well, Shannon, we spoke with you earlier this week about a State Department memo that surfaced, just in the past couple of days, which authorized the revocation of those visas for visitors from those seven countries. What was said in court today about the status of those visas?
Right. The attorney for the government said that, yes, pursuant to that State Department memo that we've been reporting on, visas for people from those seven countries listed in the executive order have been revoked. What's interesting is that two of the plaintiffs listed in this case are, in fact, F-1 visa holders from Iran. Judge Gorton asked if their visas are revoked, and the government's attorney said, well, yes, pursuant to the State Department memo, and the government's, yes, they would be revoked. And the government's attorney also said that if those two plaintiffs were to travel abroad, they were to leave the country, they would be barred from reentry. I should say those F-1 visas, those are student visas. Mm-hmm. A State Department spokesperson told us Wednesday, however, that the revocation of visas would not have an impact on the legal status of people already in the country, which, according to that statement from the spokesperson at the State Department, sounds like the plaintiffs would not have been impacted. But the federal government basically showing some mixed messages here.
Depending on which part of the government you're speaking to, it seems. Okay,
exactly.
So, Shannon, then, when can we expect a ruling from Judge Nathaniel Gorton, and what might happen next?
So the judge says he'll issue a decision before the expiration of the temporary restraining order, which is set to expire early Sunday morning. You'll recall that it was handed down by two judges on around 2 a.m. last Sunday morning. He says that, he's taking everything into consideration, and he will promptly make a decision.
That's WBUR Shannon Dooling bringing us up to speed on the Massachusetts case against President Trump's executive order on immigration. Shannon, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Meghna.
Well, that hearing happened a little bit earlier today at the Moakley Federal Courthouse and over at Logan Airport just this afternoon. That sounds of cheering at Logan, where demonstrators and college officials gathered to welcome back some college students on a flight that landed just this afternoon from Germany. U.S. Representative James McGovern and Worcester Polytechnic Institute President Lori Leshin welcomed back Benham Partapour. He's a WPUI student originally from Iran.
We've been in very close touch with this student, as well as another postdoctoral fellow who at this point has made it back in the country. We've been working this round the clock since basically Saturday morning.
So it seems every second of the day this week, something has been happening. So to help us sort through it all, Tiziana Deering, professor of Boston College School at Boston College's School of Social Work and a member of WBUR's Community Advisory Board. She's joining us today for our week in review. Tiziana, great to see you.
Great to be
can
here.
Can you see I can barely catch up with myself? Also with us today is Charlie Chipio. He's a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute. Charlie, it's great to have you as well to help us wrap
good
our heads around
here.
This. Okay, so first of all, let me just start. Just give it your top line reaction of the tsunami of events that have been happening here in Massachusetts around immigration. Charlie, go for it.
Well, it brings me back to my days of finishing in the bottom 10% of my law school class listening to all this. But it does not seem to add up, and it all just seems to continue the moves of an administration that is incredibly disorganized. But the more important issue is, clearly based on even the public comments that Rudy Giuliani made, that you can dress this up any way you want, but clearly this seems to be a banning people from returning to or coming into this country based on religion, and it's not much that's more against the spirit or the letter of the Constitution than that.
Okay, well, let's throw a little bit of tape in here. This is President Donald Trump himself talking about what the order means. This is on Saturday.
It's not a Muslim ban, but we're totally prepared. It's working out very nicely. You see it at the airport. You see it all over. It's working out very nicely. And we're going to have a very, very strict ban. And we're going to have extreme vetting, which we should have had in this country for many years.
And the president later tweeted, it doesn't matter what you call it. He thinks it's working well. Tiziana?
Well, yeah. And the wizard also kept saying, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like that. I've been desperately trying all week to kind of figure out if this is what it's going to be like now. how do we get back to first principles to try to make sense of things and figure out how to react to things as they come tumbling down? Yeah. And as I listen across this, I feel like three things come out, and they're the questions of competence, constitutionality, and cruelty. And what we have here is this bizarre intersection of something that's questionable from a constitutional standpoint, incompetently executed, and cruel. And it does seem like we all ought to be able to get around those three, if yeah. nothing else, and yet we can't really even seem to get back to
okay,
those
principles. Okay, but let me ask you both.
Yeah.
We have had people call in on our show, sit at this very table, who very passionately say what's cruel is not doing something about immigration, strengthening the borders, tightening the restrictions, such that you're not making America as safe as possible.
So it already takes more than a year, the vetting process, to get into the country. This is very different from people swimming across the Rio Grande to get into this country. You know, I look at all this and it brings to mind those words of Thomas Friedman, the Times columnist, who says every time we give out a PhD in this country to a foreign student, we should staple an H-1B visa to it because these are the people that we want to keep. And what we're doing is we're chasing them away. It's against our self-interest. Even if you, I totally agree with everything Tiziana just said, but even if you put that aside, it just does not make sense. It's just not in the interest of the American people.
Yeah, so let's totally stipulate that argument, that we do need to keep our borders safe, we need to protect ourselves from terrorism. We go back to the competence question. Is there any data or any precedent to suggest that this is the thing that is going to do that? And the answer is no. In fact, we all go all the way back to the seven countries named in the executive order do not happen to have originated any of the terrorists who have attacked us on American soil to this point. And
to this point, I mean, I think that's the thing that Donald Trump himself would say right there. Yes, they haven't so far, but he has to think into the future about what could happen
next.
Well,
and apparently in the future, the countries where he has done or is doing business are not the ones that are going to attack us.
Yeah,
that
and
seems
this
to
isn't
be the rule
a
here.
Thinking into the future. This is a knee-jerk reaction to score political points with marginal impact on deep issues that require multi-party collaboration to develop good solutions. None of that's happening here.
Well, I want to play a little bit more about, again, the tumult of news and reaction and emotion and thoughts that people in Massachusetts have been feeling this week. On Twitter a while ago, just over the weekend, I saw a picture from the Copley Square rally that happened on Sunday, and there was a protester holding a sign that said, well, I guess we're doing this every weekend now. So on Sunday, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, in front of thousands who rallied at Copley, really pushed back hard against the president's executive order. Here she is.
Little girls who flee murderers are not a threat to the United States. Elderly grandparents in airports are not a threat to the United States. Students, teachers, people who work right here in Massachusetts are not a threat to the United States.
Mayor Marty Walsh also stepped up at the same protest, and here he is.
We'll protect you with a sacred document that this country was founded on, called the United States Constitution.
All right, so those are two Massachusetts politicians. But as I said, we've heard from people, just regular residents, who feel quite differently. Here's Blaine, Cambridge resident, who called into Radio Boston on Monday.
Everyone just needs to take a deep breath. The sky is not falling. This is not a ban, and I think words matter. This is a pause. So everyone that's kind of framing it as a Muslim ban or ban against certain immigrants, that's just not true. Sovereign nations have a right to protect their borders.
Tiziana and Charlie, react to that. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say exactly this. It's 90 days or it's 120 days for refugees. The sky is not falling, according to them.
Well, it's quite a precedent, though. You know, if they can, I think the question becomes, if he can do this, then what else can he do? I mean, I think the rubber is really going to hit the road here when we get to the point where we see if this administration abides by court orders or, you know, if we're quickly going to get into this, you know, United States versus Nixon kind of situation. I think that's really the issue. The issue here is that the issues and the concepts that are on the table here are central to what this country was founded on. And if we are going to go against those, then, you know, that is serious, even if it only lasts 90 days, which let's see what happens in 90 days. I'm not sure I'm convinced, but these are very major issues. There are boundaries outside of which you cannot go, according to the Constitution.
You know, I remember listening to that caller on Monday and having quite the conversation with him in my head in my car as he called in. And there were two things that I thought. One, tell that to a Syrian refugee. It's not a pause to Syrian refugees. And two, there is a difference between something being temporary and something being a wedge. And I can tell the difference between something that's temporary and something that's a wedge. And this is a wedge.
Yep.
So, Tiziana, I want to touch on another one of the three C's that you mentioned earlier, incompetence. Mm-hmm. Is that because there seemed to be mixed signals coming from members of President Trump's own administration this week on exactly how effectively or whether or not the executive order was effectively implemented? Because on Wednesday, Homeland Security Secretary General John Kelly spoke at a press briefing, kind of giving uncertain information about how much his staff was involved in the executive order.
From day one, finishing touches, I'd have to put it that way, were being put on the executive order. As I say, the high-level folks in the government, attorneys as well, were part of that. People on my staff were generally involved.
Generally involved is the phrase that keeps catching my ear there. Then on Tuesday...
People on my staff.
On my staff, and not even
him.
Yeah. Tuesday, Press Secretary Sean Spicer really pushed back against the idea that John Kelly wasn't adequately briefed on the executive order. Here's Sean Spicer.
Part of what we're trying to do is make sure that people actually understand what happened, what the process was, and what the order actually does. Because when we use words like travel ban, that misrepresents what it is. It's seven countries previously identified by the Obama administration where, frankly, we don't get the information that we need for people coming into this country.
Charlie, your thoughts? I mean, many people have pointed to these seven countries identified by the Obama administration. That actually had to do specifically with the visa waiver program,
right?
Not necessarily a full-blown ban on visas from those countries. But your thoughts on what's going on in the government?
Well, look, they just don't seem to know. At one point, they were saying that if you had a visa, you were going to be fine. And then they started revoking visas.
Then there was all that question about green card holders.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems to be a moving target here. And you just don't know from day to day what the rules are going to be. And that's just bad governance.
You know, Donald Trump from day one ran on a platform of being a chief executive, a successful, powerful, capable chief executive. And when a famous commentator from your own party says to call it amateur hour in the White House is to slander amateurs, you know that you have a problem with competence. This is the thing. Actually, it was David Brooks.
Oh.
This is the thing he's supposed to be good at, is competent chief executive management of a complex operation. And we did not see one indication of that. The only other conceivable possibility is he's doing this chaos on purpose, and that would be even more disturbing.
But let me ask you about that, because I think some people do wonder about that, that, you know, in a way, it's the classic disruption theory applied to government and applied to the functioning of the United States of America. You want big, sweeping change. You disrupt it wholeheartedly. That's happening.
You usually have something that you put in place. And what we have right now is the disruption with zero replacement, just the disruption.
Yeah,
that's a moral question, if nothing else.
It's kind of like the FDR first 100 days. I mean, the idea is to just do so much stuff so fast that people can't react.
Well, I want to play a little bit of tape here from people who are at the receiving end of these executive orders, and those are the immigrants and visa holders who either are in Massachusetts right now or were trying to get back here. Here's some tape of the wife of Hamid Hosseini Bey. He's an Iranian man who was detained at Logan on Saturday after trying to get back to the United States after caring for his sick father. His wife spoke with WBZ's Jim Smith on Saturday.
It's just terrifying how my life has changed in 2 days, 2-3 days. Last week, everything was normal. I would pick up my daughter from preschool, you know. She was like everyone else. I was like everyone else. But now we are different.
And here's another piece from Mina Yakmozadeh. She's an Iranian PhD student at Northeastern. Just Wednesday, she told WBUR that she had chosen to live in the United States rather than in Europe because of America's history as being a nation of immigrants.
People from all over the world live together here, and I felt like this is the best place for immigrants. I felt like there is no limit here to progress. Until last week, I felt like that was the best choice. But now, I don't know.
It's, I mean, the whole nation has a story of immigration behind it. But in Massachusetts, there's, you know, we've got hundreds of years of it. And I acknowledge, of course, it was came at a cost for Native people. But also the very soul of the state today, given the economy, given where we're going, relies on immigration. What does it make you think when you hear those reactions from folks?
Well, first, it just makes me want to apologize as a citizen. Honestly, the number of times that I've just wanted to apologize on behalf of my country, and I don't mean disrespect to those who agree with the intentions as expressed behind this executive order, but I do think that we are sending a set of messages of condemnation, lack of openness, lack of intellectual curiosity about what others can bring to the table, and a lack of understanding about solidarity and community that shows a fundamental bad judgment about what we can do when we're united together.
Charlie?
I guess I have a personal reaction. It just makes me want to go back down to Ellis Island and, you know, sort of stand by the place where the names of my mom and her family who came to this country are written. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me. I'm really at a loss.
Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, both my parents immigrated to the United States, to Boston first. So I hear you. But I want to ask you both a question. We have spoken and heard from many people who voted for Donald Trump who say it's not that they're opposed to immigration. I mean, their own families have strong immigrant history and ties, but they're opposed to what they see as unfettered immigration, uncontrolled immigration, and they don't see why there can't be some kind of change, some kind of tightening, strengthening of vetting, and that they resent, you know, being painted with this broad brush in terms of the powerful and emotional reactions we've been seeing all week long. I mean, what would you say to them?
I think that's fair, and I think it's really important to distinguish our powerful and emotional reactions towards the behavior of an administration, which is a small group of people in power who are making choices, versus those who put that administration in place for broader purposes. Mm-hmm. And I think it is actually, as part of being in solidarity and community with each other, our responsibility to be able to distinguish between a handful of people who, in my mind, are abusing power and those whose intentions may have put those people into office. It's important.
I have two reactions to that, too. For those of us of a certain age who remember, you know, George Wallace would get up and say that he wasn't a racist, too, you know, but, the, you know, his deeds said otherwise. And, you know, on NPR this morning, actually, they had somebody, they were interviewing somebody in Western Pennsylvania, and the woman's reaction was, well, how can these people think that they can come to this country and take jobs? Well, isn't the idea of this country is that everybody has an opportunity, and those who can do the best job, it's supposed to be a meritocracy. And I don't think that the country is well served by saying, well, no, we have to save these jobs for these people who may not be as good at them as other people are. I mean, you know, that kind of idea in a different sense is what has gotten Western Europe into a lot of trouble, you know.
You know, Admiral James Stavridis, he's the dean at the Fletcher School at Tufts University now, former NATO Supreme Allied Commander. He had an op-ed in The Globe which struck a concerned tone, to say the least. But there was a paragraph in it which really stayed with me because he wrote about how he was talking about refugees in particular, how these are people who have more motivation, are greater risk takers, more ambition than the average folks because it takes a huge amount of courage and daring and heart to, you know, hold your 5-year-old child's hand and walk 200 miles to the Syrian-Turkish border. And he said, that's the kind of person I want on my team.
Right.
And actually, I think that's something that is forgotten, that every person who makes the decision to up and leave their country, you know, presuming they do go through an appropriate vetting process, is showing us something about who they are that maybe we do want on Team America.
Absolutely. You know, my mom used to always tell the story about when they got to Ellis Island, the idea that she would just watch all these people just get turned away and just sent back for for the most random reasons, you know? I mean, so on top of, you know, taking your child's hand and walking 200 miles, you do it with nothing in your pocket. You have no certainty when you get there. I mean, it does take a very special kind of person.
Yeah, if you looked up resilience in the dictionary, there would probably be the picture of somebody who'd made that kind of trek. And yet I saw Pew Research this week that something like 70% of Americans feel that to be a quote-unquote true American, you have to speak English.
Well, I want to play one last piece of tape here. We're not going to do our hubbubs this week. I'm just going to say there's... Sorry,
too
everyone.
Much.
I'm not... Usually I'm in the mood for them, but we're not. There's one more piece of tape I want to play because this is President Trump. This week he also weighed in on the fact that it's about African American history. Excuse me, it's been a long week for me. Forgive me. And he talked about Frederick Douglass, of course, one of the great figures of American history. He talked about Wednesday about Douglass at an event. Excuse me, I'm going to get the sentence out of my mouth.
You can't do it.
And to mark the beginning of Black History Month, here's the president.
I am very proud now that we have a museum in the National Mall where people can learn about Reverend King, so many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice.
Okay, the reason why I wanted to play that is because it was actually inadvertently, perhaps, apropos of all that's been going on with immigration this week, because in 1869, if I remember correctly, Frederick Douglass was in Boston, and he gave a fantastic speech. I've referenced this on the show before. In opposition to the Chinese Exclusion Act, when the United States was denying the opportunity for naturalization to Chinese laborers who had been brought here. It's a long speech, but there's one line where Frederick Douglass says that he believes the wings of the American eagle are broad enough to shelter all who come here. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, perhaps, maybe that's something that President Trump might be thinking about, one hopes, as we go into the weekend.
And
here,
he mentions Dr. King, and you know, one line that he used repeatedly that I think is so great and apropos is when he kept saying, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice."
Yeah, and you know, this is not our first waltz. We have done this as a country a number of times before, chosen this isolationist, exclusionary path. And if we look at history, those with the open stance have been on the right side of history every time.
Well, Tiziana Deering is a professor at Boston College's School of Social Work and a member of WBR's Community Advisory Board. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a restful weekend, if such
you
a thing
too.
Is possible. And Charlie Chibio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute, thank you as well, Charlie.
Thank you, Meghna.
Back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. I promise to be able to get sentences out of my mouth for the rest of the show. This is Radio Boston.